Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast. As always, I'm joined by our resident Millwall fan, Andy.
Afternoon, James.
Afternoon. And Statman Luke.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
In a week where it's 1,000 up for McCarthy, Darren Moore's wishing he stayed, and Matt Jay scores the only EFL hat-trick of the weekend, welcome back to the pod.
Robbins. Little Robbins. The man that thinks he should be the manager of England.
Robbins. Little Robbins. The man who should be manager of England. What a job he's really doing. I've moaned a lot. Results have not quite been what we want them to be. This weekend, though, some people touted it as a six-pointer against Derby. If so, we've just come away with all six. Thank you very much.
That's not how it quite works, but, you know, I see your point. Be looking at their sort of edging towards a really nice spot now, Coventry, aren't you?
Steady.
We do have to be careful.
Let's just slow it down. We do. a big win this weekend, although I took a similar tactic to yourself, Andy, this weekend. After midweek, I was a little bit frustrated. We'll go with frustrated with the way that the result went. And I took the weekend off. I decided it wasn't good for me to sit through another 90 minutes of it. I've seen the starting lineup at 2 o'clock, and then I've turned every device, just turned it off and gone out for a long old bike ride, just like yourself. I've come home, 3 points. So I'm not sure I'm ever going to be allowed to watch another game this season now, because it's going to be my fault if we don't win.
I would say quickly, there might be slightly different reasons. You know, you've gone out on a bike ride because you were really nervous and it was a big game. I went out for one because I didn't want to watch Millwall because it was the most boring thing in the world. So just slightly different. It was just mine was for fun. yours was like more therapy.
Close my eyes and pretend it's not happening.
Well, not on the bike, yeah.
It's been a huge week for Coventry. Maybe after that loss midweek, because you've got the news that you're moving back to the Rico.
Yeah, again, massive news, but I'm sort of siding on caution at the moment. You just never know with Coventry, and nothing formal's come out from either the club or the pests that currently own the stadium. It sounds great. It sounds like it could be a big 10-year deal that's been secured, and it would be massive for the club and the city if that was the case, as long as the surface is kept up to a good standard. But massive. And if it does get announced, then to be honest, it's a great motivation for the team as well to fight that little bit harder to stay up. But yeah, what a week. Big 3 points against Derby, potential return to the Rico Arena. And I think I might actually be smiling this weekend for once. So good weekend all round.
Mainly because of the bike ride, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great bike ride.
Are you worried that form could like drop off if you move back to the Rico? Because you'd only lost 5 in your whole tenure at the Trillion Trophy.
Worried? I'm absolutely terrified.
It depends what division it's in as
I think,
well.
Yeah.
Depends if it's going off on bike days.
I think there's a fair few mitigating factors here, isn't there? There's firstly, would we actually return this season, or would it be an agreement for the start of next season onwards? Now, might sound stupid, but clearly fans aren't going to be back in this season anyway. We've settled. We kind of know how it works at St Andrews. I genuinely, it might sound stupid, I would rather we played out the last 11 games in the same way that we currently are. We know how it works. The form has been, to be honest, pretty unreal there over the last 2 seasons now. So yeah, I think it would be nice to start afresh next season with fans in there. The other thing I think about that as well is the potential for it to feel massive, classic soulless bowl, but even more so when you've got no fans in there. I was talking to a couple of fans who I normally go to games with, and just about the amount of players in this current squad who haven't even played at the Rico yet. You've got promotion winners from last season who've not even stepped foot in the stadium. And I'd rather they were able to go to that when there's actually some fans in the ground rather than it just sort of feel massive and quite hard for them to get used to. So yeah, it's something that's big. I'm hoping it will just start from next season. We can start afresh and hopefully in this division. Now on this podcast, we love football and good football just as much as the next man. But sometimes we're just after that little bit extra out of our game, aren't we? And I think this weekend we got it. We didn't need to look any further than Middlesbrough versus Swansea. And it just had a bit of everything for us, didn't it, really?
It did, didn't it? I think Swansea are quickly becoming the most disliked team in the league, aren't they, with these decisions going their way? I think
they're villains.
I mean, they are, really. I mean, they might like it that way. But Andre Ayew, another last-minute penalty. I mean, that didn't tell the whole story, though, did it?
No, but that's what made it entertaining. And by that, I mean Warnock, another brilliant post-match. He absolutely loses his mind.
No, but he's quite calm when he says it, although the words aren't calm. He is.
There's a couple of things on that. I think you know, you just know, don't you? He doesn't need to get angry because you just know from how he's saying it, how annoyed he really is. And inside, he's just going absolutely mental. But I also found it entertaining that after the first mistake, and I will call it a mistake from the officials, he's actually the one calming his assistant down, Warnock, which gave me a little smile. But I just, they've been robbed, haven't they? They have been robbed.
You've said calming him down there, literally yanking him away from attacking him. That's what happened. He was just calming him down.
Yeah, he did look like he was about to go through the fourth official, didn't he? So, Warnock doing his bit there. I love the way that he sets himself up in that classic kind of like, well, I've got to be careful, otherwise I'll get fined here. Mm. And then carries on to lay into the officials anyway. So, acknowledges the trouble he's going to get into and then gives it some anyway.
I think the best bit was when he clearly has had enough, and the way he's talking just completely changes. It's like he's Barry White or something.
And he's the nearest man to the penalty in the 90 whatever it is minute. And if you're not sure, you don't give it.
You don't give it.
Yeah, Barry White, those sexy snakes. Yeah, it was a bit like that. I reckon it was whacking day in that Middlesbrough dressing room as well. I mean, we can laugh at Warnock all we want, but I mean, can we agree here? I think that disallowed goal was the worst decision of the whole season. I just cannot get my head around how he could possibly have given a free kick for that. Like, the lassie's just passed the ball to his teammate and a Swansea player's jumped on the ground. I could not believe it.
On top of that, I mean, you say Bolasie's played the ball, and he has. If anything, Bolasie's been booted. It's like, how's the other way? It's a penalty or a goal. I mean, it's not hard, ref. It wasn't even a difficult one. He's looking right at it. What is he giving? And then just to pile the misery on, he gives that penalty in virtue of a last kick of the game. Just brilliant.
It's exactly the same as well. The first one's enough to make him go mad. The second one's exactly the same. Like, Saville wins the ball, goes out for... he gives a corner and then goes, actually, no, penalty. It's exactly the same. He's just lost it. And I totally understand it, Warnock. He's calmer than I would expect Warnock to be.
I think he's calmer because he knows that everyone would be on his side this time. It's so black and white, that one. It's like, well, they're clearly wrong. It's like the first
they're
one.
They're just wrong.
The ref's like blown his whistle and then he's gone like, oh, that was probably the bad decision. Oh, shit, he scored. See, I can't go back. So you'd think, you know, you shouldn't, but you'd think he'd try and even it up, or at least make sure he didn't do Middlesbrough dirty again. But no, last minute. But I mean, we normally have a segment about gaffers, gaffs, or whatever we're calling it. But the best thing for me wasn't Warnock. It was Steve Cooper.
After
the game.
Literally
winding up everyone. It was one sentence he said, I'd be disappointed. Are you talking about the Stoke game as well, where they got a ridiculous penalty? I'd be disappointed if my players were making tackles like that in the last minute. the guy has just got away with murder in that game. And then he's just, and he's basically saying that, you know, I blame your own players.
How is he keeping a straight face as he's delivering some of those lines as well? Because he must know. And so he then goes on to call them both stone wallers as well. Oh, Jesus. Mate, I think you better go home and have a look at your house, because if that's a stone wall that's fell over, that's oh, you're right. You're so right. Like, Warnock was funny, but then the fact he's had the cheek to storm on and do that interview afterwards is just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What is also quite important about it is that you look at some of the teams that are actually hitting form in the table at the moment, and it leaves Middlesbrough adrift of that race a little bit, actually. And it also invited Swansea to kind of make the most of the fact that Brentford were having a week off this week. But yeah, massive really for Swansea and Middlesbrough seasons.
Swansea especially, the Stoke penalty midweek, which was just a huge dive, and now this one. They've got four extra points there that they shouldn't have, which probably will be the difference at the end of the season, like if they get promoted. But I mean, Andre Ayew, another last minute penalty. Lest we forget, he reportedly is on £80,000 a week, so well done to him.
What's he on with those goal bonuses as well?
Yeah,
no. Helping himself to another little slice of the cake.
I reckon more than, you know, Coventry's first 11. Actually, probably way, way more than Coventry's first 11. Jesus. Got confused then. I was like, oh no, that's 20 odd Coventry players.
that's paid for the next three seasons of rent at the Rico. Well, boys, I think it'd be amiss of us to leave out a certain EFL character getting to the big, big 1,000 games, Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, from one of the most entertaining games of the weekend, we've gone to one that, you know, if you ask Mick McCarthy, 1,000th game, what sort of game do you want? He's going away from home, from South Wales to Yorkshire. Yeah, 0-0. Let's take a 0-0.
Scrape a 0-0.
Yeah, preferably they'll miss a penalty as well. Oh, actually, we're being harsh on a very good, very good EFL manager over the years there. Yeah. But not the best result for him there. You'd expect Cardiff on that run of form against relegation-threatened Huddersfield to win yet again. But Yaya Sanogo's taken part in the game. His first start, a shock signing, should we put it that way? If there's any Arsenal fans listening, I'm sure they've got some opinions on him as well. But he stepped up to take that penalty first game, and boy, has he missed it. As we said... He said before, never change, Yaya, never change.
I think there's also a case of that classic manager signs a new contract on a good run, next result, doesn't win. Of course that happens. I think, to be fair, with the run they've been on, at some point it had to come to a bit of an end, and he'd rather have come away with a point than no points, and they're still well within the shout for top six. So keep doing you, Mick, please.
Yeah, I'm sure we were disappointed when we thought he was going to leave at the end of the season, but yeah, thought it might give him an extra year, 2-year contract. We'll see.
Lovely
if he,
old job. Content for this podcast.
And we go from one classic EFL manager to another one in Pearson. And after we said about their good start down there in Bristol, it's not quite gone so well for him over the last two games. And I don't think anything sums that up more than three substitutes in the first half, does it?
I don't think anything sums it up more than conceding a header to 5'2" Elias Chair, which isn't doing the cross justice, right? It's great cross from Todd Kane. But yeah, three more substitutions in the first half. Is he ever going to be satisfied with their work rate?
You say that, well, Luke, because obviously the first half was a disaster. Those goals, those goals they conceded were just embarrassing, really, weren't they? But he was a bit more happy with the second half, as he said afterwards. We had a very honest performance in the second half. Now,
honestly bad.
Yeah, I just thought, what does that mean? I really don't know what that means.
You could finish any performance with that.
Yeah, it was honest. You could
win. But you didn't lie in the second half, no?
No. We can lose out there, but I want no liars. And that's exactly what we got.
I pictured Pearson as you said that then.
Yeah.
His angry face. No,
he's really...
Bouncing it at you.
Yeah. I tell you what, in the Championship at the moment, we are blessed with some managers, aren't we, at the moment? It's great.
We just don't know how good we've got it.
Yeah. Pearson seems to be on some sort of like PR war with himself. Like he just wants to be seen as this.
I am a good man.
Yeah. You listen to his interview after and he really thinks about every single word
that comes
out of his mouth that he wants to come across in a certain way and all this. It just seems fake. Maybe I'm being harsh, but why not?
Fake? He's honest. Yeah. Totally honest.
Exactly. The irony of it all. Hello. Yeah.
Nice little Streets reference.
Hello. And I don't know, you've spoken about that PR sort of thing that he does seem to be on at the moment. We'll call it a PR journey, because for him, I'm sure it is a bit of a journey. It's not something that's ever concerned. It's not something that's ever concerned him in his career up to this point, so not quite
especially
sure why he's doing it now.
In Southeast Asia.
But he... I don't know if you saw this, but sort of like in between the first game and the second game, sort of where he was actually taking control, or however managers seem to do that at the moment, Bristol City released a series of photos of him in different angles with different lighting, wearing all different memorabilia. It was just like, it was the least Pearson thing I've ever seen. It was like, how long were they doing that photo shoot for? Gotta stay honest. Just looking into the camera, the amount of different lighting was just like, why? Yeah. Why?
I can't think of anything less Pearson.
Yeah,
a photo shoot for memorabilia.
It's like the sales through the roof now.
Do they have to give him like 30 seconds between each photo to just swear to himself? Right, you ready? Ready now, Nigel? He's just stood in the corner swearing.
We're getting there. I would say if you've got a spare, I think it's 6 minutes, Bristol City did tweet this whole post-match interview. And he starts off with being asked, what are your thoughts on the game? And he just repeats and he goes, what are my thoughts? Ha. And I just... And I thought, what did you expect him to ask? What did you think you were going to be asked? You've come to say your thoughts. And he laughed at the question. Those 6 minutes are a psychologist's dream, I think. But yeah.
So much going on.
We've gone too far now.
All he can do is laugh, because what he wants to say would not be honest.
Yeah. We should have heard.
What did I think of it?
Let's just praise QPR for a good win and Mark Warburton for just being a bit more normal.
Yeah. You say that. I can't leave this section behind without mentioning the fact that the second goal goes in and you've got Pearson giving it an absolute death stare. And then the camera pans to Warburton and he's laughing his head off and doing a fist bump. And you're just thinking, Jesus, if anything's going to wind him up, it's that. Absolutely brilliant.
That was class. It wasn't really a celebration. It was more like, yeah, we've scored against you.
How bad must you be? We're winning away.
Yeah, that was for the lack of fans. Yeah.
Well, we've spoken quite a lot over the last few weeks about teams fighting relegation and also teams pushing for promotion. And I can't help but feel like we've actually cursed a few teams on this podcast by saying, oh yeah, they're dead cert to go up. And then they go on a bit of a dodgy run. But can we just agree right now, Norwich City, destined for the Premier League this season, there's absolutely no stopping them.
Yeah. 10 points clear now, aren't they? It's just the yellow machine just keeps moving forward, doesn't he? Doesn't he? It's just
the squad's too good for this league. It wasn't as convincing at the start of the season because they were winning so many games by a goal, so many 1-0 wins, and now they're just sweeping teams aside.
You talk about a machine, you talk about sweeping. It's the most well-oiled machine I've ever seen. They literally sweep across the pitch. It's ridiculous. Their attacks are like three touches and they've gone from their own half and they're in on the goalkeeper. It's just so fluid. Their training sessions must be so exciting.
I'm not watching.
It's a strange
I'm not watching Coventry this week. I'm watching Norwich's training session.
Well, yeah, that's not a good example, Luke, because you would rather, wouldn't you?
And go out on a bike ride.
But we do say it every single week, though, don't we? That front three, especially, are just far too good for the league.
Luke always says it. Cantwell.
That front two.
Cantwell has really put Luke in his place in the last couple of weeks, especially because he's been the best of the lot, hasn't he?
I've got to concede that this week. He's clearly playing less FIFA time and more time on that training ground, looking good, not physically.
On that exciting training ground.
Mm. Oh, yeah, Ben. But you think that it's almost like they're so good. People are like, oh, hopefully they'll hang on to them next season if they get promoted. I mean, if they didn't get promoted, but even if they do, like, Buendia is going to go to a bigger club. Cantwell may as well. Who knows about Pukki? So they're in a bad... I don't want to... Before they even get promoted, I'm saying they're back down. So see you in a couple of years, boys. You've had too much praise.
Sorry, Delia.
Yeah, exactly. What we haven't mentioned is probably the most... what's the word?
Luton are the away team specialists.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going for a bit. What's most interesting that we haven't mentioned is that Luton, which has been well documented on this show, but has anyone got a stat about Luton? They are the away team, and they've really, as James said, they've just swept them. And we'll probably see that almost every week until the season's over now.
Well, from one team who can't help but sweep side to side to a team who seemingly can't help but get swept aside. Sheffield Wednesday and Darren Moore really wishing he didn't take that job now, surely.
Yeah, maybe a little bit early for that. But it is six. I think it's six losses in a row for Wednesday now, which is really, well, no other word. Just not good. And when you have lost five on the bounce before that game, when you get an early red card in the game, there really was only one way you're going to go. And I saw a lot of fans on Twitter saying they did look like they threw the towel in as soon as that happened, which is a shame. Something Darren Moore will want to sort out as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's red card number seven of the season. That perfectly sums up on the pitch what's happening off the pitch, where it is just a bit of a shambles. I don't know why Darren Moore's done it, because he's in a position at Doncaster, well, he was, where you can get promoted, that the teams might swap over. They might swap positions. And with Chancery being the owner, you just don't know what's going to happen. Like, it is just a straight in the door, straight out the door sort of scenario. And it's just, I don't know why he's done it. But then again, if the money's good,
I think he's not going to have to move house. It's a far bigger club. It's a far bigger club, and he's going to get paid a lot more. So you never know, really. But yeah, especially as we'll get on to later, Doncaster doing fairly well. It is a strange one, isn't it? And he could really have done without that red card. I mean, I don't know whether he was Julian Burner who brought down Puskas there. Ridiculous tackle. I mean, it was the most obvious red card you're going to see. And he sort of channeled what I assume Darren Moore was feeling as he was walking off, didn't he?
Just ripping the shirt. Oh dear.
It was an odd one there. He should be fined for some sort of ripping the shirt there.
Yeah, I think they're just in a very difficult place right now, aren't they? You say it's difficult to understand why he's taking the job, and it is because of the situation that they're in. But also, if you turn it around at somewhere like Wednesday and you get the fans back behind you, you keep them in the division, you're sort of set to become a bit of a you know, you're going to be loved by those fans, and there's a lot of them, I'll tell you that. And you just sort of think, you can understand why he's taking it. Huge club, big fan base, clearly a big bit of money there. But yeah, he's got a long way to go. That midweek result, losing in the very last minute to 10-man Rotherham, and then doing that this week, it's not great, is it? They look like they could be heading for the drop.
I was going to say that, James. I mean, I know, I didn't think you'd be the one to say it, but are they now in a position where they're not going to come back?
I don't think you can write anyone at Wickham. No, sorry. Apologies to any Wickham fans who are clearly not listening anymore after we slated them 5 weeks ago. But the, I think you can't write teams off too early in this division, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And maybe a week or so under his belt, and he might be able to change it around a bit. But they're struggling. There's no doubt about it. They're struggling. They look a little bit adrift after this last week of results, really. And he's got a huge job on his hands if he wants to turn it around. But I think, like you say, probably most worrying for them is the attitude after the red card. And if you can't sort that out, then you haven't really got much hope.
Yeah, but from one manager there in Darren Moore, who we know a lot about, we don't know too much about Paunovic at Reading, who a lot of people were surprised by his appointment. But I mean, they've been up there all season, haven't they? And they're still up there now. And he's even turned up this week in a sling. And apparently this is from, he was injured in training, which is quite funny. So I mean, you're Sheffield Wednesday, you've lost five on the bounce and you're turning up and their manager's getting injured in training. You're thinking, Jesus, what are these guys going to do to us? What is their workload they're putting in? How much effort is there going into their training to beat us? Yeah. Someone's done the manager. So yeah, what I'm saying there is, as soon as he turned up in a sling, the game was over.
Yeah, it was already firmly in their heads. And yeah, I think nothing summed up more as well than Zhao scoring against them again this season after their fans were quite pleased that he'd left, I think.
Yeah, there were a lot of funny tweets going around, weren't there, about Lucas Yao, people sending around these tweets that people had sent a couple of years ago when he left, about how they absolutely milked Reading for the money they got for Lucas Yao. But it's come back to bite them with where the two clubs are at the moment. We don't want to rub it in even more for Sheffield Wednesday, but we will.
Don't want to.
No, but if it's there...
It's doing itself.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that made it. Was it 18 for the season in the league for him as well? Just to really, really rub that one in.
Well, from one manager that needs to turn things around in Darren Moore to another in Tony Mowbray. He comes into this Millwall game, going to the Den, has no win in seven, turns up, clean sheet, 3 points. Thank you very much.
No, Luke, we've been through this. Sorry, Blackburn fans. We're moving on to League One. play a clip.
Halfback passes to centre, back to wing, back to centre. Centre holds it.
We're down into League One, and obviously the huge appointment of Cook at Ipswich to take over from Lambert, who was providing us with a little bit of content actually, but I think for the sake of Ipswich and their fans, it's probably not a bad move. And he started by saying quite a few words that would sort of try to inspire the fans. And just 2 days ago, in fact, he actually said that now that he was in charge there, they would be targeting a top two finish. And what better way to get that underway with a loss?
Yeah, poor Cookie. They're 12 points off the top two now as we speak here. So, I mean, you've got to be surprised if that happens. But what was... funny, or even more ironic after that, was they were five games without defeat before this game. And then he's his first game he takes over. They're well and truly beaten by Gillingham. But one thing that's stayed the same is Troy Parrott is there. I've just said his name and it's been, people have laughed.
Welcome to the pod.
Has it come to this? No, Troy Parrott. I mean, I've only seen brief highlights from the game, but one thing did catch my eye. Ball in the box, Ipswich desperate for a goal. Troy Parrott bicycle kick hits the post. Couldn't believe it. I said, Troy, small steps, baby steps. Just put it in normally. He's tried a bicycle kick. It's just not working out for him, is it? Mm. Yeah, hopefully he'll get underway soon. And Paul Cook will turn it around because we all expect him to be honest, don't we?
Yes.
Quick shout out for Verdane Oliver, who's got 4 in his last 3. He got 2 in that game. The last one was an absolute beauty as well.
Yeah, it was a great goal. And I think actually someone like Steve Evans would have absolutely loved turning up to the party there and ruining it, wouldn't he? So good result for Gillingham and not so good for Cookie.
Yeah, Steve Evans looks like he ruins a few parties.
Yeah, well, I was so sort of transfixed by Paul Cook there that I forgot that Steve Evans was the other manager there, yeah. Baptism of fire. Welcome back to League One, Paul Cook. From a manager who's just started Ipswich in Paul Cook, why don't we move on to a manager who unfortunately could be on his way out soon in Kenny Jackett at Portsmouth. I mean, the Portsmouth fans haven't been happy for a while now, especially with the sort of football they play. And another terrible loss there, being 4-0 down in the first half.
Yeah, the football all season has been a bit drab, but at the start of the season, they had John Marquise and Marcus Harness to drag them out of that hole. But since their form's dropped off a bit, it's become a lot more evident and the results have kind of followed.
Yeah, I think the big problem that Jackett's got at the minute is that actually the team on paper is more than capable of doing good things in that division. And I stuck up for him in the past as well and sort of said that back end of last season, had the points per game not come into place, potentially they'd have had a chance to push on. And I don't know, like you say, patience is pretty low already in the Portsmouth fans. And if he doesn't turn it around soon, then it's not going to end well for him.
Yeah, hats off to Northampton, though. They're the lowest goal scorers in the league and they've invited Portsmouth over and they've put 4 past them. First of all, Ryan Watson free kick, wonderful. Then 2 identical corners to the back post in 10 minutes. I like the guy who covered this on the EFL on Quest, who just said Portsmouth goalkeeper Craig McGilvery was flapping like a shirt on a washing line.
Yeah, I did corners. Catch that. I caught that one. And I hope I'd never hear it again, but here we are.
You caught it. Unlike McGilvery. So no. I think that sort of thing must be so annoying as a manager as well. Like, you've just done it. What are you doing? What? How have you let it happen again? Like virtually the exact same thing. It's like Northampton then spent the next 80 minutes trying to get corners just so they could keep doing it.
you do feel bad for Kenny Jackett there. But the first one is an absolute wonder. No, we all do. Don't we? First goal is an absolute wonder free kick. And the next 3 are all just terrible defending and pretty bad goalkeeping as well. So, I mean, it's just not going well, is it? I mean, I think they're one of those teams that, especially in League One, when they're at home as well, that their fans make a big difference for them. So maybe they've struggled there. But yeah, I just can't see it ending too well there. The Kenny Jackett story, maybe they might end up in the playoffs, but is that even good enough?
I think that's it, isn't it? The expectations down there are pretty high. One win in the last 5 leaves them looking pretty risky for that last spot. They currently hold it, but Accrington can catch them with their game in hand, and so can Ipswich, actually. So it's going to be a difficult end to the season for them, I think. And talking of teams at the moment who both been absolutely flying. The 2 form teams in the division came up against each other at the weekend. It was Peterborough against Burton. And I know we've talked a lot about Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank and the job that he's done since coming down to Burton. And Christ, he's carried it on again this weekend. I don't know whether to start with the coat first or the 3 points. But what a result for Jimmy Floyd.
You know, when you said you don't know whether you should start with, I think we all know. What a coat that is.
Why not? Looks like he's actually walking around in a sleeping bag with the feet cut off the bottom of it. So
you know it's a good coat when you've won.
That laugh.
What a comparison.
No, I think Jimmy he's been sort of overshadowed, really, because, I mean, Dino Mamry are the number two there. It's getting loads of praise, and rightly so, for the job he's done and the job he's done at numerous other clubs in the past. I mean, so Jimmy's thought, you know, how do I get the limelight back on me? I'll wear a Wenger-style coat and I'll get, and it'll be mentioned on, you know, small EFL podcasts such as this.
Up and down the land. Yeah, when you've won seven in your last nine, and the coat's taken all the limelight, is a magnificent piece of
coat. Piece of
coat. Piece of coat.
Material.
They've kept out that front three, well, until the 95th minute when it was too late. It's easy to forget that Jake Buxton didn't keep a single clean sheet in 22 games until Hasselbaink arrived. And the whole emphasis that Hasselbaink and Mamria have put onto the club has been all about the defence. And that's what's been noticeable. Like, they won against Bristol Rovers in midweek, and Hasselbaink said, we need to be 100% better than our win against Bristol Rovers on the weekend, which just shows how much he's like stepped up the standards of that club. They're up to 18th, which is huge. They're also 4 points off of safety. Again, with so many teams dropping points below them when they're just not, this is huge.
It's almost a shame, isn't it, that they're doing it so early. I mean, the great escape vibes are going to be lost. I mean, they've still got 15 games left. They've got 15 games left. They could finish, you know, 12th, 13th, 14th this season, and they'll be like, oh, what were you worried about?
You have to say, though, on that, actually, if they'd made a slightly better appointment at the start of the season, just where Burton could have ended up. But I do suppose that Hasselbaink has brought in basically a whole starting 11 in the January window, and what a difference it's made. Yeah, there were some interesting results all over the league, to be honest. Fleetwood getting a great away win at in-form Shrewsbury. Sunderland managing to carry on their charge, winning 2-0 against Rochdale. A huge result for Wigan in their challenge to try and stay up, managing to put three past MK Dons, who have not done that too much across this season. Donny Rovers carry on their charge despite losing Darren Moore. And Accrington Stanley look like they might just be able to push on for that top six. Now find themselves just outside of the top six with a game in hand still to be played.
Wrexham will sadly have to be promoted for me to get on it. You better keep the seat warm, baby.
Down into League Two, and it was a huge result for Exeter. If they're going to be putting together another promotion push this season, then they're going to need to start picking up points and picking them up fast. And what a day for Matt Jay, scoring himself a hat-trick, and I think the only one across the EFL this weekend, and really put Leighton Orient to the sword. And obviously Mackinough probably not having the effects that he would hope to have at the moment, but I can't see him being there long-term anyway. And as I say, 4-0 for Exeter, and a great result for them.
Yeah, Exeter are very capable of putting four past any team in this league with the kind of front six that they have. But that is the worst. It's the worst hat-trick I've seen. Not maybe this season, maybe ever. The first one I'm going to nominate for goal of the week, so heads up for that. The second one, you've got two players inside the six-yard box basically arguing over who's going to put it in the net. So that doesn't look good for Leighton Orient. And the third one is a very unconvincing penalty. But, you know, they all count. They all count.
An unconvincing pen. bit harsh.
Yeah, you say a bit harsh. I'm going to continue that harshness because Leighton Orient sacking their manager, they're mid-table, they've got nothing to play for. Season over.
It is just the latest episode in the What Do They Expect TV series, isn't it?
Another side who are looking to really put together kind of the finishing run to see off the season and see themselves promoted is Cheltenham, and come up against Port Vale, who Clark has obviously just gone there recently and tried to turn their fortunes around a bit. And unfortunately, again, he's failed. It's 3-2 to Cheltenham, and they're looking really strong now for promotion. They've got a couple of games at hand on Cambridge, who sit in second. And if they can finish as strongly as they've kind of been going at the moment, can't really see anyone catching them.
In terms of the league, you're right, but that game there, they didn't exactly finish strongly at all. They were 3-0 up with 15 minutes to go, and ended 3-2. Yeah, apart from a late swan song from Port Vale, Will Swan with the first goal there. And then, but yeah, it wasn't quite enough. Cheltenham held on, which keeps them in such a good position, doesn't it? Two games in hand over Cambridge and Forest Green, and sitting a point and a couple of points ahead of them both. Moving on to Cambridge there, though. I mean, it looked like they were heading towards another draw. Don't know why that's funny. Paul Mullin, it's got to be one of the goals of the day as well. Last minute strike. There was a late goal for them last week as well. It's just those teams at the top of League Two now really look like it could be a cut above Cambridge, Cheltenham and Forest Green.
And Luke, we've just been discussing those teams that we think probably going to run away with the division now. And Carlisle dropped off recently, haven't they? Any thoughts on this weekend?
A few. Mostly negative.
Well, go
mostly
on, then. Go
negative. Well, a few teams running away with the league. We're running away from the league, it seems. We've lost 3-1 to Morecambe, and only one team looked like a promotion candidate. I've got in my notes 1 point from 21. That's relegation form.
It's worse than that. I mean,
yeah.
You look at the league table, you're still expecting to see them in the top three. 13th now. I know they've obviously got games in hand. But 13th, that is incredible.
You can say games in hand on that format. But they're not going to lose them.
Well, yeah, they can have 46 and they ain't going to win.
They're only 14 points off the bottom too.
Hayden, another goal. So there's another one for you, Mr. Hayden. Bennett, mm-hmm. My namesake, not getting a start due to giving away a penalty, it seems, last week. But I want to focus on the positives. Now, I don't know if you've heard of this.
Oh.
But we've got some money coming into Carlisle due to a little clause in Dean Henderson's contract. Yes, Man United's Dean Henderson. So there's from when he was 14, there's a clause in his contract that they get payment whenever he makes an appearance for another club. De Gea's out for Man United for a month or so. I think he's just had a child or something. But Dean Henderson's starting. Well, that's the reason he's not injured. So Dean Henderson's starting. Carlisle get £10,000 for every appearance that he makes. Whilst you're playing two games a week, that is enough to pay for an entire first 11 match day squad.
How wasn't someone official from Carlisle gone in? Stamped on Henderson's toe. No, De Gea's toe.
if they keep going the way they are going, they probably would do that. Yeah. injures Henderson. Go, no, the other one.
Ah. Oh, Bennett, you've done it again.
So there's one positive for Carlisle at the moment, and that's it. Just financially.
That is an incredible thing, isn't it? You sign a 14-year-old and put in his contract every time he plays, we'll give you 10 grand. I mean, and here we are, 10 plus years later, and they're reaping the rewards. Not on the pitch.
I've actually seen, Luke, quite a few little arguments on social media about Beach and the potential of that classic corner flag tweet popping up at some point soon from the Carlisle admin. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on that.
No, it's pointless. It was overachieving being in the automatic places anyway, overachieving being in the playoff places. So if we're going to be in League Two for another year, so be it. But he's not smiling for once. It's taken him like 7 losses out of like 8 games or something to stop smiling. So nah, it's pointless. A bit like when Millwall like went on that run with Rout. Oh, I can't argue with that there.
I think the only way that I would like to end off or round off League Two is just by going back to Newport. Now, we've given them a little bit of stick, since we have had a bit of a laugh in previous weeks at their pitch, and nothing against them, but the pitch was dire. And it looks like they might have finally come up with some sort of plan, and a plan that, as a Coventry fan, I can't really have a go at. That's right, they're playing their own game somewhere else. They're going to be playing a couple of their upcoming home games at the Cardiff City Stadium, which I assume the plan behind that is that they'll give them a bit of time to sort out the surface at Rodney Parade. So hopefully next time we see some highlights coming from a home game at Newport, when it does end up back there, it won't be so much of a beach.
Well, I assume the rugby season has finished then, because obviously it is home to the Newport Gwent Dragons. So, yeah. Unless they're moving to Cardiff as well. But it's worked fairly well for Coventry this season. So we'll see if it does the job for Newport. Luke's quiz. Edit that in.
Right, straight into the quiz this week. No messing around.
All good.
We're looking for the top 20 goal scorers of the last 20 years in the second division of English football.
Oh my word.
Huge question.
I might need that repeat. I might need that repeating. There was a lot going on in that question there. I heard 20 about four times.
It's difficult.
We're looking for the top 20 goal scorers of the last 20 years in the second division of English football. I have to say second division, because that does go past when it was renamed the Championship. But since the turn of the century, top 20 goal scorers. You get one life. So you're allowed one wrong answer, because I've looked through the top 100 and there are many answers that could throw you off. There are so many good players.
This is a classic case of if you're scoring a lot of goals in that division, why aren't you moving up to the Premier League?
Exactly. Yeah.
This is a proper journeyman question, isn't it? Which is something I pride myself on knowing a lot about.
Fully get behind. I can get behind that so well. So let me fully clarify this question before I make a total idiot of myself. We're just after the people that have finished top goal scorer each season.
No.
Oh no. You're looking for most goals in the second division of English football since the turn of the century.
Who's scored the most?
In 20.
Someone might have 150.
No.
Christ,
the top goal scorer, 121 goals. 20th place, 77 goals.
This is really hard. Jesus, this is
hard. Did you say 77, Luke? Is the least.
Least. That creeps you onto this list. We've got James to go first.
It's not easy, this, is it? I think I'll go for a man whose name I only ever hear followed by scores goals. I'm going to go for Billy Sharp.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, third place, 114 goals.
See,
that's annoying, isn't it? annoying because it didn't come into my head, that one, for some reason, and it was the third best answer. I'm going to go for a player of a similar ilk. Yeah. In Dave the Difference Nugent.
Number one,
121 goals.
I'm going to go with someone who I'm pretty sure we actually spoke about fairly recently. Retired recently. Not sure if he scored enough, though. Danny Graham.
Number 11, 83 goals.
Did you say we get a life? We get a life, Luke.
Oh, yeah, you're allowed one wrong answer. I looked in the top 100 and it's the players in there, it's brutal. They're all good guesses.
Graham was in there.
I'm going to have to go for this player just because we mentioned him maybe last week, saying he got 30 in one season. So I'm hoping he's got 47. Okay, I've said Glenn Murray now because I'm just trying to...
No, Glenn Murray's not in there. He's lost his life.
He didn't get bloody 47 more over the years.
That takes a little bit of pressure off. It's weird because we talked about a couple of players who've scored a lot, like who have sort of headed up the goal scoring charts in previous seasons. But then it's like you say, you've got to just got to hope they've also then scored enough in other seasons. I'm going to go for someone who's joined us recently back in the EFL after a couple of seasons down here in the Championship. I'm going to go for Troy Deeney.
Number 9, 84 goals.
I'm going to go someone weird here. I think it's last 20 years, though. This is the sort of question you want when we're sat in the pub, you know, and we've got half an hour to think of as many as possible. But there's exactly pressure on.
I think I've taken to a tactic of think of players you've just played a lot of games rather than goal scorers. Trying to think about if you're making like an EFL classic team, maybe who you'd put in there or championship.
Yeah, that's why I want to
hope that they've scored enough goals.
That's why I'm about to say what I'm about to say. That exact thinking. Peter Whittingham.
I knew that's who you were going to say.
The only central midfielder in the list. 82 goals. That's impressive.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit frustrated. I'm a bit frustrated that I gave that spiel about choose someone who's played a lot of games. And then I should not have said the classic EFL team thing, because that was about to be my next guest, Whittingham. I really wanted to try and fit a Coventry player or an ex-Coventry player into this question. And with the benefit of having the life in my hands, I'm going to risk it. An ex-Coventry player who... The only reason I'm saying it is for that exact reason. He's played quite a few seasons now in the Championship. Lukas Jukovic, the Duke.
12th place, 82 goals.
Get him! That is a lot of goals. I was expecting him to be down near the 20 mark. God, how many games has he played? 5,004.
I really want to say, guys, that life, not having that life is infuriating, isn't it?
I don't know.
And you never will, probably, because this is going to be wrong.
Go on.
Sylvain Ebanks Blake.
No chance.
No. Why not? He scored goals for years. Andy Keogh. Jesus.
No, Andy Keogh. I'll give
Cameron Jerome.
Oh, that's got to be right. That's got to be
right. He's in there.
And what about the one I was trying to describe to Andy was Kevin Phillips.
Kevin Phillips. Kevin Phillips actually stands out on this list because he's 17th. He scored 78 goals. He's got the best minutes per goal on this list by quite a way. If you go down the top 100, the only players with better minutes per goals, oddly, Tammy Abraham, Timu Pukki,
Jesus,
and Dwight Gayle.
Yeah,
Charlie Austin.
He's in there. Going from 20th to first. Tom Ince. That's an odd one.
Jesus.
Naki Wells.
Fucking hell.
I had Wells.
Chris Wood, Kevin Phillips, Marlon King, Cameron Jerome, Charlie Austin, Peter Whittingham, Lukas Jukovic, Danny Graham, Dexter Blackstock. Lovely to see.
That's the same ilk as Ebanks Blake, to be fair.
Yeah, it is. Just scored more.
Troy Deeney, Darius Henderson, Daryl Murphy, Chris Martin, Lewis Graben, Jordan Rhodes, idiot. Billy
Chris
Sharp.
Martin. We've been idiots.
Fourth place.
This is difficult.
Billy Sharp in third, Jesus. Ross McCormack in second, David Nugent first.
Oh, come on.
I got first place, though.
Come on.
Which actually is the easiest answer, so don't know why.
Engine. Well, it must be that time of the week again. Goal of the week. Luke, what have you bought?
Well, I alluded to mine earlier in the Exeter game, and I've bought exactly that. Matt Jay having the luckiest hat-trick of all time, and it was started off with, the first one is just a pot shot from outside the box, straight at the keeper. He goes to catch it. Don't get your body behind it. That's how you catch a ball. He tries to catch it off to the side. It goes straight through his arms and into the net. Hilarious. Awful goalkeeping.
So you've brought mainly the goalkeeper as your goal of the week rather than Matt Jay, who scored a hat trick. That sums up the negativity of this podcast, actually, doesn't it? And maybe talking of negativity, I've brought along a goal that happened at the Den. Sam Gallagher, the second goal.
Say no more.
Yeah, absolute. Yeah, just terrible defending all round, and then the ball's just bounced off at about three different people in the box, pinball, and then it just smacks against Gallagher and goes in. And the Millwall defenders had the nerve to appeal for offside or handball. Anyway, I said move on earlier from that game, and I've brought it there. But yeah, James, what have you brought?
Well, I hear your two suggestions, and we've got one where the goalkeeper's dropped it in his own net, one that's taken 15 million pinball deflections and come off someone's stomach and rolled in.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll bring along a serious goal this week. And a big... And that's why next week I'll be bringing in a little pee roller. So the goal I've brought along, not only was it an unbelievable finish by a player who has picked up quite a lot of plaudits this season. Yeah, not only was it a great strike, but it was a match-winning goal. And for a side who really need to keep up those 3 points, it was, of course, Cambridge. It was Mullin with an absolute screamer from outside the area, and he's just hammered it into the top corner to take all 3 points. And as I say, it kept them on the charge for promotion. So Paul Mullin is my entry this week.
Three good goals. I think if Matt Jay scores a hat-trick, you've got to give him a little bit more than we did on the show already, you know, the only hat-trick of the weekend, not one that normally gets a hat-trick. So I'd like to cast my vote for him, surprisingly, this week. I can see in Luke's eyes there that you can't believe it. But
I can't believe it, because I was voting for yours, Andy, the pinball
don't
wizard.
Say that now.
So if I vote for mine, we draw.
What happens? What happens in a draw?
I don't know. It's unprecedented.
You'll be pleased to know I'm not voting for mine. Usually, I like to kind of annoy Luke a little bit in this round and make sure that he doesn't win. But this week, I actually feel like voting for his goal will annoy him more than not voting for it. He's given Jay a hell of a lot of stick this week for what he's called the luckiest hat trick. I mean, 3 goals in a game. You have to be pretty lucky for everyone to be a lucky goal. So I'm actually going for the goal that you've brought along this week, Luke, and you've won.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Well done, Matt Jay. Lucky on the pitch, lucky on the pod. Goal of the week.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
It's that time of the week again, isn't it, guys, where we try and predict something that will happen in the next week of EFL football. None successful so far. I'm going down to League One for mine. Paul Cook's just taken charge of Ipswich. They're playing against a Plymouth side who enjoy quite a lot of goals in their games, but I've mentioned him already on this show. I think Troy Parrott is going to get a hat-trick against Plymouth.
I tell you what. It's like having a parrot on the show. He just repeats it all the time.
He loves the guy. He wants him back.
Can I borrow a feeling? Like, seriously. anyone else got one?
Yeah, and I'm actually going to talk about something that I've already spoken about on this week's pod as well. It's it is, of course, Newport Stadium situation. Gone to Cardiff and... Cardiff in great form at the moment, and Newport needs to start picking up points, really. And I think they'll do the exact opposite of that. We said earlier that Coventry have done well in a different stadium this season, and you said that maybe it can happen for Newport. Oh, no, that's not how this podcast works. I'm going for 2 own goals against Bradford in the week. They're going to concede 2 own goals in their new home. Good luck to Newport County.
Well, for any new listeners of the podcast, if you missed out a good...
Where have you been?
a good 7-8 weeks ago.
When here we comes dog on the pitch.
Oh, you know it. With all the news that we're returning, I don't want to miss out. There's so much space in those grounds for a dog to be running around.
Yeah.
And if...
His mind just changed to the mind of a dog there. Just, I'd love to run around on one of those big green pitches.
God, if I had 4 legs, I could really get around that pitch.
Yeah. Couldn't.
It is high risk, high reward. That is the highest of risks I think I've done on this part of the podcast. And it would be the highest reward. I've been going on about it for weeks. There's news that we'll be going back near the end of the season. Dog on a pitch. I want it to happen.
So Luke's gone back to a classic there, hasn't he?
well, they do say reasons. That, don't they? They do say that. If it's not working out, go back to basics. Go back to what you're good at.
Works for Burton, it'll not work for me.
Yeah, well, it's the definition of insanity, isn't it? Doing the same thing over and over. Expecting different results. But yeah, that's high risk, high reward for you. Keep your eyes out.
Of course, if it does happen, we all know where that video is going to end up. On our social media, Andy.
Yeah, you can follow us at Three's a Crowd Pod on Twitter. And more importantly, if you've ever got anything you want us to discuss on the show, a question to ask, it's threesacrowdpod@outlook.com.
Yeah, nicely done. And I think all that really does leave me to do is wrap up this week's podcast. So thanks very much, boys, and I'll see you next week.
See you next Monday.
Yeah, see you next week.
We didn't talk about the game.
Ah, fuck the game.
I only wrote one thing, and it was about Matty James shoving the ref out the way so he could have a shot. See that?
you got to mention that.
Can we have the outro music?
Can I barrow a feeling?
I don't know about yours. It was around the same time as people used to go. Now, this was maybe not something that happened at your school, but people used to go like, you're knocking the ball around. And they go, oh, you got skills?
Yeah.
Bum disease.
How was that big in Coventry and in Portishead? Like, how does that thing move?
Yeah, exactly.
Kids telling each other, and it's got all around the country. What's funny is you go like, do you have skills? And then someone goes like, well, obviously, yeah.
You know, you went to an English school, an English primary school.
If you were ever asked if you had skills, yes was the wrong answer.
Shit.
Right, let's get started.
Oh, Christ. Get started.